classes I gave here, it was listened more than 2,200 times. So it was quite quite a success for our classes on the internet. So, Krishna tells Arjuna, you think to be this body, because when you talk about men and women, for instance, this is my wife. You say this is my wife because you think to be a man, and the other person who is in front of you is a woman. You don't get married with a bird, or with a dog, or with a cat. Only women. Why you get married with a woman? Because you think to be a man. This is the basic root of all ignorances, thinking to be a body. Arjuna was thinking to be a man, he was thinking to be a warrior. I don't want to fight because this war is not good. And Arjuna was, although he was talking a very high philosophy, and he was talking about a lot of principles on morality and ethics, but Krishna was saying, okay, all morality is okay, all ethics, that's okay, but the main thing in human life is to establish who you are. Otherwise you spend the whole of your life doing things that they are not part of an absolute concept. Everything you get by doing things with the body, for the body, will finish with the body. And we are eternal. And what is the proof that we are eternal? Is it possible to establish a proof? There are proofs. Of course there are. It just takes a little analysis on ourselves, and you can very easily realize that you are different from the body. I just make one example. It's very, very clear. So the body will die. Are we all in agreement with this principle? Death is certain. So that means that to die is something natural for the body, because the body will die. So let's go now here on the street, and let's try to cross while a car is coming. What do we do?
Run away.
Or you wait, you run, something. Why? You don't want to be hit by the car. Why?
I don't want to die.
Because otherwise you will die, and you don't want to die. But we just said that death is natural for the body. So why do we act in our life in such a unnatural way? Why we don't want things that are so natural for the body, like suffering, like getting old? Who wants to be old? You know, I'm getting old, I'm 56, I don't want to be 56. You know, I remember yesterday, you know, it seems yesterday, but it is not, that I was 20. I was so strong, I do so many things, but now I cannot do. I don't even can dream to do anymore. I don't want to get old. So why I don't want to do, I don't want to get old while old age is natural for the body? So it's really ourselves who are testifying our real nature, which is hidden. It's hidden behind our ignorance, our identification with the body. We think to be the body, but we don't act as the bodies. We act in a different way. So it's really so difficult to conclude that we are not this body. That's the first conclusion and the first topic that Sri Krishna dealt with Arjuna. When Arjuna started to be ready to hear it, because Arjuna in the beginning was not ready, because he was saying so many things You know, he was not asking to Krishna, he was telling to Krishna. So if someone is not ready to listen, you talk to him, but you don't really, you keep for yourself the most important things he would like to say, because the other person is not listening. He wants you to listen. So Krishna was not talking. And only when, in the seventh verse of the second chapter, Arjuna said, okay, now I'm so confused. And I'm suffering actually, because I am in this situation. Remember that Krishna and Arjuna were in the middle of two armies. And what armies? There are 640 million people. There's a lot of people there in Kurukshetra in India, ready for a war, a huge war. It was hundreds of kilometers of people. And it was the most, maybe the biggest, most crowded war ever fought, person by person. So Krishna and Arjuna were in the middle, and Arjuna said, I don't want to be the cause of this war. And Arjuna was telling him why actually he was forced to fight. So we are not this body, is the lesson that Krishna taught to Arjuna when Arjuna was ready to listen. Are we ready to listen to Krishna now? Do we want to know more? Do we want to know why we are here? Do we want to know why we came in this body? Why we'll get old, as I said before? Why we'll die? All these questions should be there. Because a human being who doesn't put this question, it's hardly fit to be called a human being. What do the animals do in the morning? They wake up and they put questions, very simple questions, like, how am I going to eat? How am I going to live, protect myself? Where I'm going to sleep or where I'm going to stay? That's all. That's what the animals do. They just eat, basically. They defend themselves. And they just, you know, try to find some mating here and there. That's all. Is this life? It's a circular. You know, I live because I want to live. That's all. I live because I want to live, because I want to live, because I want to live. Everything you do is for living. But why you are living? Is there a reason why we are alive? Is there a mission that we had to accomplish, maybe for, even for ourselves? Is there something that can be called perfect, that can give us unlimited life? Is there a possibility to not to die? Now this is a question we have to put. Can be happy, actually happy. Everyone wants to be happy. But who is happy in this world? Only the fool. Only the fools. Because happiness in this world is nothing more than the temporary interruption of misery. Every time you are happy, it will go away. Just a question of time, everything finishes. And during the small, insignificant segment, when you are happy, you must feel, because it's impossible that you don't feel some feeling of being incomplete. That this happiness that you are feeling is something is missing. It's not really what you wanted. And you think, oh, I worked so much to have this thing. Really, I thought that it was something bigger. And now, not only is finished, but even during the time, it wasn't such a big thing. And why is that? Why we don't want happiness to have an end, and why we are never satisfied with anything we experiment in our life? Again, because we are spirit soul, we are not this body. You know who are the most miserable people in the world? The richest. The more, it's true. The more you are rich, the more miserable you are. Why? Because at least the poor people, they have some, you know, some dream, you know, when I will be rich. Now I'm miserable because I am poor, but the day I will be rich, I will be so happy. So in this dream, they live for this dream. But when the dream becomes reality, that's it. That's, they don't have even have the dream to live for. That's just so miserable. Because it is true, the money doesn't make you happy, but nothing else it makes you happy. It's really happiness, it's not something part of this world. Happiness in the spiritual world is not in the material world. Because matter is not alive. Matter is just, it's a dead thing. And everything in this world is made of dead thing. Krishna was saying to Arjuna, you are not this body, and what you are spirit soul. That's what Krishna was saying to Arjuna. Then a new horizon opened to Arjuna, and he understood that his misery was coming from the ignorance. From ignorance. It's not just this world that exists, but there is another world. So we are spirit soul, coming into a material body, living from some time in a material body, identifying with this material body, and therefore thinking I'm a man, I'm a woman, I am, or if you take birth in an animal, I am an animal, and then you die. And what happens when you die? Do you think that you actually die? You don't die, because you are eternal. You come in a body and you continue to exist after this body. And where you go when you die, that depends from what we call karma. Karma is a Sanskrit word that comes from the root, kri, which means to do. So karma is action. And according not only to our philosophy and not only to the most elementary logic, but even according to science, that there is no action without a reaction, and there is no a reaction without having been an action before. So sometimes you see the action, and you must be intelligent to see that there will be a reaction. And sometimes you see a reaction coming into your life, and you think, oh, this is unjust. You know, why so many injustices in this world? So many things. Why this kid died? Or why earthquakes and so many people who did nothing died, etc. So God, if it exists, then he is unjust. But it's not so, because there is no such a thing as a reaction without an action, and this is not restricted to one life. You know, there are many lives that we did things, and at a certain point, like a fruit, fructifies. And you don't know what you did to deserve what you are getting, but you must have done something to deserve it, because there is no such a thing as injustices in this world. Everything is a mathematical reaction. You did something, 1 + 1 = 2, and you know, that's what. This is karma. So the karma is the base of the concept of reincarnation. If the soul is eternal, and then what happened to you when you leave the body? You must get some other body, depending from the karma, depending what you did in this life. You did something, you must get a reaction in the next life. And the next body you will get, it depends not from what you did in the past life, but from the consciousness that you had at the moment of death. From the consciousness. You know, some religious people say, oh, don't worry, live as you like. The Christians especially, they say that. I know something, being born in Rome, so I grew up as a Christian. So the idea is that do what you, or try to be a good Christian, but you know, basically do what you like to do. Then at the last moment of your life, you just sing to God, and you go to paradise. That's the idea. It's the most hypocritical idea I ever heard in my life. How is it possible? How is it possible? You are kidding with God? You do what you want? It's enough that, or the other idea is that, oh, basically I can do what you want because Jesus Christ died for me on the cross, you know. And for more than 2,000 years, everyone is justified to do anything they want because we have our Savior. Oh, this is totally unacceptable. This is totally false idea. This is totally false idea. You go to hell if you misbehave, and Christ will not save you. Nobody will save you because it is the state of your consciousness that will give you another body. Not exactly what you did, because what you did is like, it's very complicated. The sum is like a complex mathematical operation. So many things all together, then at the end you become something at the end of the... So the state of your consciousness, it is what it will give you the state of the next body. And if you really like to eat the whole day, you won't do anything else than eating, then this is your desire, this is your consciousness. If you are pervaded by what we call anamaya, which means I live because I eat, then you get a body that there are not so many limitations like the human body, that you cannot eat much. And then you get an animal. Yeah, there are so many animals that can eat anything they want, and as much as they want, there's no limit. And then you'll be happy, so-called happy, in another body. You can eat so much, and at the end, even in that body, you will never be happy, actually. Because happiness is spiritual. So this is this basic lesson from Sri Krishna is something that you have to understand more deeply. This is so important. This is the base of the Bhagavad Gita. It's the base of human life to understand it, this principle. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness was founded by Srila Prabhupada in 1966 to give this education to people. There are so many schools. There are no schools where they teach this, the philosophy of spirituality. It's just everything is just body, even philosophies. You have so material. They refer to the body or the mind or intelligence. But subtler, the intelligence is the soul. So who really talks about the soul? Nobody. So we want to provide this education, and we really appreciate when the people at the end of our classes make questions, because questions is the base of understanding. If one makes questions, then he is interested in understanding. So now, the Bhagavad Gita is 700 verses only, so it's relatively small book, but it's really full of philosophical principles, because it's written in a very, like a sutra-like, very concise. Every word, we can talk about every word of the Bhagavad Gita for hours. So today, I wanted to talk about the main lessons of the Bhagavad Gita, the main lesson of the Bhagavad Gita. I would like now to take some questions from you so that we can give an idea. I will ask you to please talk to the machine so can everybody will.
Can I have somebody to be so kind to bring the...
You talked about the reincarnation from bodily form to bodily form, but it also speaks of, was it Krishna Loka? Kind of like something aside from a bodily form. I know it's kind of probably hard to talk about. Probably a futile conversation, but I don't even know what the question is, really. Just an acknowledgement, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. As we said, there are two worlds, the material world, which is this one, and the spiritual world. So, when our consciousness at the end of our life is not completely, perfectly spiritual, then we are forced to take another material body, because that's the nature of our consciousness, the quality, you know. The quality of your action and the quality of your reaction must be correspondent. So you cannot get a spiritual reaction if you do material action, because these two energies, although coming from the same source, which is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are very different. They are incompatible, actually. They cannot stay together. It's like water and oil. You shake them as much as you want, they will never stay together because they are incompatible. So when you start to do spiritual activities, and at the end of the practice of spiritual activity, your consciousness become completely spiritualized, then you have no desire for material bodies, because you don't need them. You understand that this material body is so limited that you want a better body, because you don't want limitations anymore. You see, then you take a spiritual body and you go to Krishna Loka. Krishna Loka, going to Krishna Loka does not answer to the action-reaction mechanism. It's something completely different. There is no action-reaction in the spiritual world, because everything is absolute, the same quality, everything you do. Not that there are no actions in the spiritual world, but there are no, let's call it, mathematical reactions, because everything, it just comes from the heart. So there is no such a thing as obligated reaction in the spiritual world. So you get a body depending from the nature of your consciousness. So what you want to do? What you want to do with your life? You want to just become old and die? I don't think so.
But doesn't it speak of something even aside from that, which would be the union with...
Can you say it again?
Like, aside from Krishna Loka.
Aside?
Or not aside, well. Aside. Other than.
Besides.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, just union with Godhead is that something different?
Something different?
You know what I mean?
Just trying to understand your question and be able to answer. More.
Because he thinks that Krishna Loka is something other than God in
right.
The Christian sense.
There you go.
Well, the conception of God in Christian culture is very different from ours. We agree that there is a God, but how our God is, it must be really understood. While in the Christian sense, God is only one, and you don't see many different aspects of the Supreme in Christian religion or in other religion, for that matter. In our religion, it's something really, really extraordinary, because you can see that in our conception, God is so plural, that can be infinite. It can come out from him infinite aspects. So much so that people think that we are polytheists, which is not. We are monotheists. There is only one God, but God has infinite powers and can become infinite personality, and you can have with him as many type of relationships that you desire, that you wish. So that in our books, in our literature, you're finding unbelievable things that you will never believe or never heard before. Like there are particular kinds of devotees who want a very special type relationship with God, that God takes that form just to satisfy his devotees. Sometimes takes forms of hills, and like Govardhan Hill, or river like the Ganges River, or it takes so many forms. And people think, oh, these people, they believe that Krishna is a plant like Tulasi, you know, or the cow, they worship the cow. So what is this? But actually, again, Krishna is only one. It takes so many forms. And so the absolute truth is one and different at the same time. It's one and plural. One is a number that makes you believe that God is only one, you know. But if you say that God is only one, you limit God, because it's just one, but I want something else. What does it mean? And if you say that God is many, then it's like saying that God does not exist, because it's not one specifically. God must be one specific. So how do we put together this apparent contradiction? That God is one and many at the same time. Difficult to understand. But not so much, actually. If you understand that sometimes we dress in white, sometimes we dress in red, sometimes you comb your hairs in a certain way, and sometimes in another way, sometimes you put some makeup, and sometimes you go somewhere and act, you know, you become something else. Why? Because the multiplicity is a characteristic of any souls, that he wants to be, it's one. At the same time, he likes to play in millions different ways, because variety is at the base of happiness. You cannot be happy if you do always the same thing. You must. Happiness means many things, and so is God. God is one, but at the same time, he likes to be and do and think and feel in infinite ways. So the absolute truth must be one and different at the same time. Cannot be one, it cannot be different only. It can be both at the same time. And this is what in Sanskrit we call Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Abheda Abheda means one, abheda, different. Tattva means truth. One at the same time. So if you like a Krishna as you can read it and understand it in the Gita, then it's okay. Otherwise, you cannot think of a God that does not exist, because Krishna is actually infinite. You make an effort to think the way you want a God, and most probably you are thinking of it, it exists. This is called archetype. Archetype is something that you don't even know that it exists, but you cannot think to something if the thing does not exist. It just comes to you, you don't know that it exists, but it must exist. Sometimes Krishna comes as a king, sometimes he comes as a studious person, sometimes as a woman, sometimes as a fish, sometimes as an eagle. So many aspects. So Achintya Veda Aveda Tattva means that Krishna is one. And multiplicious, it's okay? It exists, the world, at the same time. Any religion, they will tell you Krishna is Allah, that's all. Or God is Yahweh, that's all. Or God is Buddha, although nobody ever said that Buddha is God. But anyway, just for the sake of talking. We say that Krishna is God, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which does not mean that any other form of God is inferior to him. That is called, this is a science, it's a science of rasa, it's called rasa. There was one devotee, it was called Anupama, who had two brothers, older brothers, Rupa Sanatana, their names. Rupa Sanatana were Krishna's devotees. And Anupama was a devotee of another form of Krishna, which is called Ramachandra. So the two devotees, the two brothers, the elder brothers, they were talking to his younger brother, saying, Krishna is superior to Ramachandra, because you can get more taste, more happiness. And the other one, studying the scriptures, because he was a great scientist, a great philosopher, could understand that actually the quantity of the taste that you can get from relating with God in that form, Krishna, was superior to anyone else. If you study, you cannot get anything better than with Krishna. But then Anupama was a devotee of Lord Ramachandra. And Lord Ramachandra was completely different form of Krishna. And you can say that maybe some less quantity of taste of that you can get from Ram. But he was a devotee of Ram. You know, like, my wife is the most beautiful woman in the world. Every man who is actually in love with his wife says like that, because it may be not objectively true. Probably she is not the most beautiful, but love makes you see her in that way. And it actually not objectively true, but subjectively true. You see her as the most beautiful, and that's you, that's your realization, that's your taste. You will never be as happy as with your beloved wife, with any other woman in the world, anyone, even the most beautiful. It doesn't matter, because that's the way of love. So Anupama was seeing his Lord Ramachandra, the greatest form, because this was his form. Just like his wife, his beloved wife. So at the end, Rupa Sanatana had to surrender, because there was a part of the science of rasa. So every one of us has a relationship with God. But what form of God, it has to be seen. We are Krishna's devotees. We love Krishna, we are Krishna, but that doesn't mean that we say that any other form of the Lord is not existing. It may be quantitatively less, but qualitatively is the same, is not superior. There are people who are happier with Ramachandra than with Radha Krishna. Try to convince a dog that your pizza is very good. He prefers something else found in the street, because he's a dog. So see how the conception of God, the Supreme Personality, is so vast in our philosophy. And there's no other philosopher who teaches this way, how the Lord is not one only, is not many only, is one and many at the same time. Any other question? If there are no questions, we have to finish.
Could you share at least one highlight from your last journey?
Oh man, last journey.
This journey, past month.
Well, I traveled a lot, and this journey was not really necktied because it was a work. I am in charge of few countries, and so one of these countries is Costa Rica. Costa Rica is very small, beautiful country in Central America, and we had a very big community there, with a lot of land, like houses, etc. Then a big problem came, and so our movement there is a little suspended on the air, And very soon we are going to have again a very big temple, and we are thinking of building in the center of the city, etc. Costa Ricans, who are called Ticos, are very nice people. All the Latins are nice, of course, you know, very gentle, very kind-hearted. And Costa Ricans are like this. And one important thing is that I was invited at the Central University of Costa Rica, which is the most, I've been told that it is the most important university in Central America. I don't know, because when I went to Panama, they said the same thing. So everyone is.
Everyone's wife is the most beautiful.
Oh yeah, yeah. So you see. Anyway, it's a very big, big, huge university, which is at the center of the city. The zone is called San Pedro, and they invited me to come, give not one lesson but a series of lectures on the Bhagavatam, the Srimad Bhagavatam, not the Bhagavad Gita. So I'm preparing this. And the devotees are just waiting for their temple. They had extremely beautiful deities. You must see these deities. No? Gornitai deities. They are called the Gornitai. You must go see it. That's extremely beautiful. They're big like this. Nitai Gorasundar, it is called. They make a lot of questions. Since I have the fortune to speak Spanish too, it's like, you know, very pleasant to preach. And they have asked me to talk about Tulasi Devi, and there were guests who had never been in the temple before, but they insisted with me to talk about Tulasi Devi. And the people at the end was like very appreciative, even if it was the first time that they come in a temple and they hear the God comes as a plant also, you know, it's like, wow, wow. Who are these people? Maybe I thought that we are a little crazy. The first time that I went to a temple, I was 18 years old, they opened the first Italian temple in Rome, just at 200 meters from my home, where I was living. So I was seeing these particular people, you know, going around dressed like this, and then I had met also my spiritual mother. It's a long story, I don't want to say it. But the first thing that they told me is that, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and I, what? Just the name for me was just impossible even to hear it, you know. It's long arms touching the knee. You try to touch your knee, told me the boy. He was a 16 years old boy, was younger than me. And I tried, I couldn't, you know, because it's really particular. You see? Because he is God. That's why he can touch his knees. And I thought, wow, that's unbelievable, you know. There is someone crazier than me. And then there was a lot of pictures in the walls, and he told me that there was a Mahavishnu creating the universe. So Mahavishnu creates the universe by letting them come out of the pores of the skin. Yeah, but there is another one where you can actually see the bubbles coming out of his skin. He said, you see, that's how the universes are created. These are bubbles coming out from the pores of the Lord's skin, you know, that's all. I said, yeah, unbelievable. But you see, there are two types of information in our philosophy. Something really rational that you can understand very easily. It takes a little effort. And then there is something else which is, just you accept it or not accept it, doesn't really matter, you know. Because the beginning of the spiritual life is actually understanding. You have to understand. Faith, you know, it's maybe there, maybe not there. It's really not necessary. It's really not important. I remember actually to have been rejected. I was feeling really not, because the priest at the time when I was young, the hour
of religion was compulsory at school. I don't know here if you have this, but in Italy you had that. You had. Now it's not anymore. You know, I was making questions, like our friend made questions. And my questions were not liked by the professor, who was a priest. So at the end he got fed up with me, and he told me, you know, religion is about faith. You must believe, either you believe or you don't believe. And I said, I don't believe. So this is why I should be thrown in hell? This is really God? And he said, yes. I said, okay, then I become atheist. And I became an atheist. Or so I thought, but actually I was not. Because understanding must be there. It's not true that God cannot be understood. Of course, you know, cannot understand everything about God. You know, we have hard time to even know how our body is made, and it is the closest thing to you that you have. So we are limited. But that doesn't mean that if you cannot understand everything, you cannot understand anything. Something you can understand, a lot you can understand about God. A God is not true that he hides itself behind complicated reasoning or concepts. It actually can be understood. But you had to wish, you had to have the desire. And it is called Shraddha in Sanskrit. Shraddha means that you have to have an intense desire to know. And since God is in your heart, then he sees this desire and he pushes you in some special way. You may find some people in Home Depot. And it gives you the address of the temple, and here you are listening about the Bhagavad Gita. It happened in a very special way. The first devotee I saw in my life was my spiritual master, actually, Srila Prabhupada. The first devotee, I never met a devotee personally. I saw Srila Prabhupada, but not in person. I saw it in a poster. Prabhupada was coming in Italy at the beginning of 74. Was the first devotee that I saw. And I was in a bus, and there was in Rome in the morning about 8 o'clock. It's like you can hear it. I was in a bus like this, hanging, but there was no necessity because you couldn't fall anywhere because there were so many people. We were like a block of meat in that bus. And this bus stopped for 15, 20 minutes in front of a pole, you know, where there is a light coming out. That there was a poster of Srila Prabhupada saying, you know, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada coming to Rome, and 15 minutes like this, you know, looking at my spiritual master, I couldn't turn anywhere because it was tough. That's how my spiritual life actually began. Everyone has a beginning, and it's very artistic the way that Krishna comes in somebody's life. Every one of us has his own story. So as you can see, it's very interesting, a lot of variety in this philosophy, and the way we live it also is not boring at all. So we invite you to please continue coming and studying this philosophy, reading our books, which are very important, especially the Bhagavad Gita. Don't go back to your home without the Bhagavad Gita. A home is not a home if there is not a Bhagavad Gita. So please get your copy of Bhagavad Gita, read it. And while you read it, don't just read it, you know. Read it with a copybook at the side. And every time you have a question, sometimes you don't understand something, or you would like to understand more about. So something you don't agree. Disagreement is not bad at all. Who said that someone should accept everything just like this? It's not true. Disagreeing is very good for the intelligence. It's like when you go in a gym to do the gym, you know, the working. If you don't move, then you don't actually grow. Only the fat grows in your body, but not the muscles. So if your intelligence is not active while you study the Bhagavad Gita, when you listen to the Bhagavad Gita, it's just like this, stopped in a state of stupor, then it doesn't move. So you must have questions, you must curiosities, and you should also disagree. And then you say, Prabhu, I disagree on this, can you? And then there is a discussion, and this discussion is so nice. This is the real happiness of life, when you discuss philosophy. Any other question, or we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, everybody.